The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the Internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
Well, good morning. You really should be awake by this point. Really. And it is, I think, time to start, if that's okay. I'd like to pray before we begin. Father in heaven, thank you very, very much for your kindnesses toward us. Thank you that you're patient with us when we're fools. And we thank you that you forgive us and you lead us beyond that. And Father, we pray that you'd bless this brief time together in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, there are two places you could be this morning, and hopefully you're in the right one. But I always feel like I have to give you the option of getting out. Okay? So this is Principles for Principles. And you will notice, really, that the spelling is different. Okay? I have actually seen administrators spell it the wrong way. And I think, seriously? Okay? Don't do that. So I'm going to plunge right in. I'm Tom Garfield, and I've been doing this for a few years. Started when I was 15. Okay, that's not true. I try to tell people that when they say, 33 years, really? Yeah, so if you tell them you start when you're 15, they're not really sure if you're kidding. You know, so they do the math, and they go, wow, that's not right. I'm pretty sure you're wrong on that one. So anyway, and there's still so much to learn. So many options, so little time. So what I'm basically saying is, if you've done this for any length of time, you know there are a lot of books out there for administration, for boards, for running schools, all sorts of stuff. So we're just going to look at it 7, okay, and I'll get into that in just a minute. But going to Scripture, this might make us feel better, it might make us feel worse, but anyway, it's just kind of one of these interesting things. One way to look at how we fit in as administrators, and that's who I hope I'm talking to, and if not, you're filling that role to some degree, fit in the hierarchy, as Paul says, of the giving of gifts in the church. You look at 1 Corinthians, for instance, 1 Corinthians 12, 27, 28, when he says this, "Now you are Christ's body and individually members of it, and God is appointed in the church." Now, he ranks these. This isn't me, okay? This isn't some permutation of the translation. This is what he said. First apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healing, helps, administrations, various kinds of tongues. By my reckoning, we're 7th. Okay, not that we're really counting. Okay, we are. But 7th, okay, we're 7th on that list. First apostles, second prophets, third teachers. Okay, and of course, we're probably talking there about teachers of the word, but still. So, we're behind the helps, okay? We're kind of behind the helps. So if you need a little assistance with the humility, maybe that's something to think about. People that help come before administrators. Okay, that's probably not the best, you know, way to interpret that. But that means something, okay? So Paul urges us to desire the greater gifts, greater than possibly what we have. Okay, so if you, for instance, are an administrator and you have what you believe is, and I want to be careful, I'm not getting into doctrinal stuff here, but you have some abilities that relate to your administration, that you like to administrate, you like to put things in order, you like to make things work for people, okay? If you're desiring the greater gifts, Paul says, well, teaching is greater. And I seriously hope you regard it that way, okay? I hope you really regard it that way. I hope we regard what we do in our schools as being a facilitator to our teachers, because they're really carrying the heavy work, right? They're doing the work. In a very real sense, not trying to twist the scriptures here, but in a very real sense, they have the greater gift. And certainly in the school, that's what should be happening, is that we are making their jobs easier. Okay. How many books are there out there about the good guidance for administrators? Holy moly, there's tons of them. But are there how many good ones out there? Maybe not as many as we think. But I've read a few, and so I'd like to distill some of those thoughts down for you. So these are not all original, which is probably a good thing. But they are distilled from experience as well as some of these things I've read. So, virtually all the challenges and joys I've experienced from out in Moscow, Idaho, are I'm going to say, I hope it's not presumptuous, it's very similar to what you've experienced or will experience. And that's why we can come together, look at some things together, and say, yes, that's true here where I teach and administrate as it is out the way the heck in northern Idaho. Okay, we're all Adam's flesh, and so we can share some of these things together. Okay, seven principles. I am freely stealing from John Milton Gregory. Okay, seven laws of teaching. I love that book. If you're not familiar with it, really, really, you need to be. Okay, because it's about teaching. All right, so I'm going to borrow that quite heavily, but twist it a bit. Woo, are you catching this? Okay, I'm not doing that on purpose. Keep you awake. All right, he's got certain logic there, and that is, for instance, the seven laws in the book. The seven laws, one of the best things it does for you and your teachers is it provides observable, objective means or criteria to assess the success of that teacher or not. Okay? You follow that? Teachers love to know how they're doing. Teachers love to know how they're doing it. And having gone to the University of Idaho and the Ed College there, one of the things very sadly lacking in that whole program is how to assess a teacher's success. It's very ooshy-gooshy and, you know, hard to get your hands on. Why is that? Because they don't want anybody to feel bad. Nobody should fail, right? And that's, frankly, what the attitude they're going to take into their schools. And surprise, surprise, we have the state of things that we have. Okay? Nobody should fail. Teachers, our teachers, want to know how they're doing. You want to know how you're doing at your job. There should be objective measures of how you're doing, how we're doing in our work. Okay. So this is one of the things that the seven laws does. In the same way, the leadership an administrator demonstrates in a school, especially one lifting up the name of Christ, should be founded on something more than warm feelings or the unique personality of the administrator. Okay? Let me say this as a disclaimer up front. Just as a cold, heartless teacher, in theory, could apply the seven laws woodenly and still fail in the most important role of teaching, and that is loving the students, so could a dull, stoic administrator, in theory, apply time-tested principles skillfully and still fail dramatically in leading the school. Okay? It all does come down to, are you loving the way you should love? Okay? I think that needed to be said. Obviously, personalities matter. But you didn't come here to have me suggest that you change your personality. And if you can find a way to do that, I'd be very interested to hear that. Okay? I think it's too late for me, my son. But if you're thinking you need to change your personality, that's just really silly. Okay? Personalities matter. But almost any personality, if I could dare say, can apply these things. All right, here's a quote from a very great general of World War II, Omar Bradley. Judgment comes from experience. Experience comes from bad judgment. Ouch. Okay, well, here's the thing. Obviously, what you're hearing there is hopefully sinking in. what have we learned the most from, our victories or our failures? Yeah. You remember the failures. You remember the failures. And hope you learn from them. Okay, at first blush, the seven laws in the book may produce the profound reaction of, duh. As in, really? You wrote a book about this? I hope that was your first reaction on reading the seven laws. If you haven't read it, now I've just stolen your first reaction. But I think you'll relate to this. You open it up. First law of the teaching. First law of the seven laws is the law of the teacher. Do you guys know it? What does the teacher need to do? What's that? Know stuff. Know the stuff to be taught. Ooh. Let me write that down, because that's profound. The teacher needs to know what they're going to teach. Mm. Okay. You think, did Gregory get a PhD for this book? Because, wow, that's impressive. All right. Just as General Bradley's comment there, I hope that strikes a sympathetic chord. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. The problem is lots of things are obvious, and we still mess them up. Look at the Ten Commandments. They're really not that deep. I don't mean to be irreverent here, but they're really not that deep. Don't kill people. Don't kill. What's the original Hebrew? Don't kill people. No, really, I need to get behind this. I need to get underneath this. What are you really trying to say here? Don't kill people. All right. Teacher needs to know their stuff. Okay? Okay. So you can have these laws. The principles. The principle of the board. Principle of the board. The principle must help train the board. All right. Now, maybe that's not on first blush an obvious thing. Certainly wasn't for me when I heard it from somebody else that I'm stealing from. Because it can seem counterintuitive. Or possibly even insubordinate. Me, train my board. I work for them. I'm their servant, in a very real sense. I do what they tell me to do. How in the world could I help train them? And maybe even why should I try to do this? All right? Obviously, we should show up expecting to be given orders at a board meeting or whatever. We are the servant of the board. We are their resource person. Okay? And I struggled with this for years. Thinking, I'd come to a board meeting thinking, yes, I need to be the servant of the board. And they'd be talking about things. And I had, and I didn't do this very often, to bite my tongue and think, I can't say what I believe right now because they're talking really bogus stuff. And if they tried that in the school, like Doug just said, quoting Nate, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket. It's just, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, this was actually a relief to hear from a professor about training the board. Who knows more about the school? You or the board? Well, if you're doing your job, you do. That's not insubordinate. That's just a fact. That's the way it should be. You know more about the school than the board does. Let's be really obvious. That's why they hired you. Us. All right? Now I'm going to make a comparison here, which is really kind of creepy, but bear with me. I've often thought it's like this, and it is, I think, a pretty good comparison. It's sort of like a marriage and a home. All right? Biblically speaking, it's sort of like a marriage and a home. We're the wives. We're the mothers. We're the chief executives of the home. Dad is the board. Okay? It really does kind of work. I mean, just get past kind of the weird stuff. But it actually does work in terms of roles. Julie knows far more. When we were raising our kids, she knew far more about how the day went at home than I did. I wasn't there. Okay? She still knows a lot more about our home than I do. Our children are all grown. I've lived in the same house that she's lived in for whatever it is, 28 years now. I still don't know where to put the colander. Unless, it's over there, right? Okay. I'm new here. These glasses, not in here? Honey, you always put them there. I always have to move them. Oh, well, they're glass. So glasses, you know? No, those are wine glasses. Oh, she knows more about this home than I do. Okay? But who's responsible for the home? I am. Who's responsible for the school? The board is. So doesn't it make sense that we who know the most about the school should help the board make good decisions by giving them all the information they possibly could need? Okay? That's training. Even how to be board members. Okay. How can you help? Now, as I go through this, this is the same kind of model that hopefully if you've read the seven laws, this looks very familiar. He gives a law, then he gives a sample rule that's like a subordinate to that law, and then he says, and here's a violation. And if you've taught any length of time as well as administrated, when you read that book, you go, oh yeah, that's my violation. You own that. Trust me, you will. Okay? You'll really identify with those. Okay, so here's a sample rule. Make a point of clarifying with them the specific actions they want you to take. Clarify with them the specific actions you want to take. They want you to take. Minutes might take a while to get back to you. Okay, the formal minutes of the board meeting may take a while to get back to you. So write down what you hear. When they vote and they pass something, write it down then. Maybe this, again, is fairly obvious, but I'm going to maybe say a lot of that. Then restate it back to them. Do I understand? Okay, here's what I understand you want me to do. Okay? If you're into the governance model, this will sound familiar. But whether you are or not, it doesn't matter. You need to be very clear with them and help them understand they need to be clear with you. Seriously, you guys, I could talk about this the whole time and not overstate it. The communication from the board to the administration is critical. They need to help. You need to help them understand that. Okay? That it's critical that you understand what they want you to do. Consensus or the, you know, do you get a sense of the board? Don't settle for that. No, no, no. Motion. Okay? Second, passed. And that motion should have specific wording, and you write it down, and you know exactly what it means. And if you don't know exactly what it means, ask them right then. Okay, that's a little bit of training for them. What's a violation? Oh, this is good. Come to a board meeting with a problem and no proposed solution. Come to a board meeting with a problem and no proposed solution. Okay? That does a bad thing. For one thing, it trains them that, or helps them understand, you are not doing your job. Should not make them feel very good. Okay? It doesn't help them at all with understanding their role. You see what I'm saying? And it would probably make your life miserable. Because what's your option when they come up with a solution? You do it. What if you don't like their solution? You do it anyway. Well, that's true of all their decisions, of course, but if you come and if you really have no solution, then whatever they give you, you go, wow, glad you thought of that because I sure didn't think of that. But I almost guarantee you that's not going to be your reaction. They'll come up with something that you didn't even think about because, well, that just would be a dumb thing to do. Well, if you think that was a dumb thing to do, why didn't you say something? Something else. Propose anything other than what you don't want to do. That actually made sense. Okay. Principal of the teacher. The principal must understand the teaching process. It is very likely that if you teach, it is very likely you are not the best teacher in your school. Okay? Take that pressure off you right now if you've been tempted to adopt it. If you teach at the school and you're the administrator, you don't have to be the best teacher. And I would probably put even money that you aren't. Sorry, I don't hardly know any of you. I'm not trying to be rude. I know I'm not. And I've taught longer than anybody there right now. And I'm not the best teacher by a long shot. Okay? So that pressure you don't need to have. But that doesn't take you off the hook. I think you should teach.
That's kind of what I'm getting at here.
To understand the teaching process from the inside out, I think you should teach. Okay? You should do all you can to understand what the methodology is that classical Christian education is promoting. Well, how best can you understand it? Do it. Do it. Okay? That's my rule for you. Study and discuss the particulars of the teaching techniques at every level with the teachers. Okay? Again, doesn't mean you're going to be the best. But listen to them. Listen to them. You understand what you're asking from them. I've taught ever since Logos began. And it's not because I have to tell you. I'd love to say, yeah, so I thought about it and I thought, I need to lead by example. Okay?
Oh, my word. I cannot seriously tell you how unready I was to do this. I really can't. We don't have the time, and you might not believe me. But I did teach, largely because everybody had to. Right? Can you relate to that? When your school began, everybody had to teach because everybody needed to teach. Something. Maybe lots of things. Stuff you don't even know about. Okay? Because somebody needed to do it, and there you are. You are a warm body and willing. And you got it. Okay? I understand that. But you really should, as a administrator, look for ways to teach so that you understand the teaching process from the inside out. What's a sample violation? Assuming that knowing the philosophy of classical instruction is adequate for your purposes. Does anybody really do this? Yes, I've been on many accreditation teams, okay, where the administrator religiously, may I say, religiously sent out articles to his teachers about classical Christian education. And they were good articles. But that was his way of training the teachers. Their school failed. Why? Well, because telling them what to do is not the same thing as making sure they're doing it. He hadn't been in the classrooms to see that the effect of his many notes was pretty much nil. He wasn't teaching, so he couldn't speak their language, and he wasn't in the classrooms, so he couldn't see what they were doing. But he was saying lots of really good stuff. Okay, the principle of the student. Here's another duh one. The principal must love and know the students. Administrators can and you should realize we are one degree of separation away, at least, from the kids. Right? We are at least one degree of separation away from the kids. Not to beat it up too much, but another reason for teaching. Take away that degree of separation, at least from a few. But we are one degree away. Okay, that is, without thinking or planning, we can too often let the teachers be the only faculty faces that the students see on a daily basis. But let's assume the best. You actually like being with the students, and even more, the students like to see you. Okay? All right, there is more to this principle than just being kind and friendly. In Matthew 18, 1 through 14, I recommend you read that again. That may be one you're familiar with. It's before the section on church discipline. One that also is very applicable in the school, and that is going to the source of the problem first and then going up from there. Okay? That's a whole other talk. But that section on that is Christ talking about stumbling believers, young believers. And again, I don't know Greek or Hebrew, but I read in the Bible, and it sure looks to me like the context is children. It looks like children. I'm sorry. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, seriously, if I miss something. But this whole passage begins with children and ends with children. Verses 1 through 14, Matthew 18. Check it out. It sounds to me like Christ is saying, heaven help you if you stumble these little ones who believe in me. A millstone would be preferable. I mean, that's what he said. Right? That's a pretty heavy injunction, and I think we need to keep it in the back of our minds, not the front of our minds, okay? Every day, every situation in which you are dealing with these children, you are Christ to them. And they want to know, what does he look like? What does he sound like? What does he say? Okay, Anything less than the truth is stumbling. There is no middle ground. Anything less than Christ is stumbling. All right, here's a sample rule. Work at getting to know the kids. I like to use a photo directory. Okay? If you have any kind of school pictures taken, you can probably get this if you don't have it. All right? A photo directory shows, here are all the kids in first grades with their names. And I go through the year, and I highlight the ones that I don't know, okay? I highlight the ones I know, and then I go through, and as I get to know them, I highlight their name, okay? And so pretty soon the whole thing is full of highlighted things. It's not really a scientific process, okay? Whatever works. Get to know them. Now, you might think, well, you know, we have 43 kids in the school or whatever. Hey, easy schmeasy. Yeah, I remember that. That's, yes. But if you're not disciplined about it, trust me, when you get a year and you get 30 new ones, you're going to be working really hard. Okay. Oh, by the way, little ones don't mind telling you the names a lot. Okay? They really don't. Ask them again. Make a game out of it. What's my name? They love to do this. I go out at lunchtime. What's my name? And I'll pretend that I don't know. Because, well, I don't know. And so, but if you pretend that you don't know, see, it's a game. And, you know, Matilda.
No, it's not Matilda.
Yeah. And sure as shooting, see, the girls are all going into this, you know. Sure, the guys, it's like, what is your problem? That's Bethine. You know, I think, you know, I know, I'm just messing with her. Okay, don't actually lie to the children. But, and then the next day or whatever it is, the next week you come out and you go, I know it starts with a B. Okay, but don't do that. Just say, it starts with a B. Yeah, okay. Have fun with it. They don't mind. Seriously, I'm not kidding you. It's great. That's why they're so good with old people. Okay? They're very patient. They love talking about themselves, and you need to, need all those reminders. By the way, a little safety tip, don't try this with high school kids. They don't think it's funny when you don't remember their name from yesterday. They're very happy to tell you how old and decrepit you are. Okay, sample violations, well, of course, not doing it. Okay? Not taking the necessary time. It takes time. You need to study these children. You need to get to know them. It takes work. You can't do it behind your desk. You have to get out in the hallways. Okay. Ripping on through. The principle of the parent. The principal must respect and listen to the parents. Okay? Well, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm not talking about the ones you like. Okay, you're going to do that anyway. It's like I tell my 10th graders in U.S. history. Here's a little tip on studying. Don't study what you know. That's a waste of time. Don't study what you know. It's already there. Study what you don't know. Okay, well, same thing with the parents. It's easy to be nice to the ones you like. It's easy to talk to them. And you find yourself doing that. And of course you're going to respect and listen to them. You like them. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the ones you don't like and don't respect. And let's be really honest. There are families in our schools who really are hard to like and respect, especially that second part, because maybe they're not doing it all right. You know the ones I'm talking about. I'm not talking about child abuse. That should end rather quickly in how you do things. I'm talking about people you just think, oh my word, really? You put that in her lunch again? How many Twinkies do you think she needs? Really? Okay? Or the kid, you know, the ones that come dressed kind of, you know, it's okay to wash the uniforms. Really, it's okay. You could do that. In fact, you know, there's this hot implement called an iron. Make a big difference in how he looks. The ones that aren't doing it all perfectly. Maybe they're the ones that are hardest to listen to. Okay? I would love to tell you that after all this time. Nothing surprises me anymore. But then a new year begins. Okay. Anyway, look for the ones, the parents, who are the outliers. Okay? Look for the outliers. Look for the ones who do just drop off the kids and you really never see them, or the dads. I mean, how hard is it to communicate with parents these days, really? Okay? Maybe you don't text them. That's a little, maybe, too intimate. But emails, really not difficult. And it's amazing, just that touch of personal connection, say with a dad that you've seen twice in the year, just that touch of personal connection gets a response. So listen, respect them. Okay, here's a sample rule. We have a growing number of single parents. I bet you do too. Right? I bet you do too. A growing number of single parents. Divorce is hardly going out of style, sadly. And so, you know, yes, at our Christian schools, we have a lot of single moms. We have a few single dads. Be there for them. Be there for them. Make a point. You can always spot them, right? They're the ones that look like they had 4 hours of sleep, drop off the kids. They're always moving. They're never standing still. They're not the ones standing among a bunch of moms and just having a nice little chat. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. No, they're the ones that are racing out the door to the job. Okay. Sample violation. Relying only on group emails to think you're communicating with the parents. It's fast, easy, okay, and thorough. I get it. I'd use it to get certain information out. But please don't think you're getting to know the parents. Okay. Principle of the curriculum. The principal must know the basic content and value of the curriculum. Now, again, this may seem, well, yes, that's what we use. Well, again, thank you. Sad thing is, I have been in a number of schools where I've had administrators say, well, that's not really what I do. We have a committee for that, or we have, you know, a dean of students or a dean of academics or whatever it is who does that. Well, yeah, okay, you don't necessarily do it. But my word, you should kind of love it and know what it's about. Okay, let me just say right off the top. No, you don't need to know, and you can't, I don't think, be that Renaissance person who knows everything that's being taught at any given moment. Okay, what is happening in the physics class in the third quarter? Right? Shoot, I don't know what's happening pretty much any time with physics. Jim Nance is a good friend of mine. He's one of our full-time teachers, been there over 20 years. He and I walk almost daily together. And he'll be excited frequently about what he just did in a physics class. And I listen. And honestly, he could be speaking Swahili. And I would get as much out of it. And I just nod and listen, you know, smile and wave. You know, it's just... And he'll talk to me. And then he knows I have no idea what he's saying. Okay? And he'll say, that's pretty cool, isn't it? Yeah, you bet. Sure. Whatever that was. Kids like it? Yeah. Good. Good. Okay? But I can get him back with something about Theodore Roosevelt. So, you know. It just doesn't sound as good, though. It just, you know, because he can understand those stories. It's not fair. Anyway, your school's actual curriculum and development oversight may be actually somebody else's technical job. It may be a committee's job. I get that, right? But the principle still applies. You need to know what is important in your curriculum and be able to articulate that to new families and students. I enjoy that. You know, you're walking around the school. You're showing a new family the kindergarten. You should be able to say, what are the things that go, what happens here? Socially and academically. What happens here? It's a great place. You go into a high school classroom. What are some of the books that they're reading? You should know that, even if you haven't read them all. Let's be honest, probably haven't. But you should know. Okay? What's a high priority in your school, academically speaking, curricularly speaking? All right? For instance, okay, you need to know that what's important is being reinforced, that's being integrated, that's being cyclical. Why do that? You should be able to explain what's different about your program than this other Christian school. Not just the classical methodology, but what do you do with the content? Why'd you choose the content that you chose? What do you do with your curriculum every year? How does it change? How does it adapt? How does it grow? Okay? What's biblically appropriate about the way you teach history or science? Are the arts important? They should be. Okay? Why are they important? You should be able to tell a parent, we don't do anything because it's expected or it's traditional or it's just what schools do. You should be able to tell them in all honesty, you have thought about this, your school has thought about this from A to Z. We don't have any anomalies. Everything relates back to our philosophy. Okay? Especially in the curriculum. All right, here's a sample rule. You need to be a voice. You need to influence how your school's curriculum develops. Obviously, this ties in with knowing what your teachers are doing and how they're doing it. Annually review your teacher's assessment of their class's curriculum objectives. Your curriculum guides should be a very, very living document type of thing. It's changed. Okay? It should change. It should be reviewed annually. It should change annually. Okay? All right, a sample violation. Basically, leaving this critical area and responsibility totally to others. Or not being able to briefly and easily summarize how your school's classical Christian approach to knowledge is unique and valuable. Okay? You can try this at home. You know, you get told not to do things, but here's one to try. Pick any discipline in your curriculum, science, history, math, even Bible. Then try to write on one side of an index card the key elements of that discipline that your students gain in their K-12 experience. Could you do it? Really? Could you summarize on the back of an index card what your science program is trying to accomplish from K-12? I'm totally serious. You should be able to do that. Principle of the campus. The principal must pursue beauty as well as function in your campus. Let's state the obvious. In a school, form does have to follow function. Okay? We are dealing with children in an enclosed environment. Certain things need to be in place. Okay? The primary bodily needs should be addressed in all the applicable places. Adequate and clean bathrooms, clean eating and safe play areas, fresh air, interior temperature controls, personal storage units, comfortable seating, and workspaces are all a must. Okay? That should not be a news item. I'm sure it's not. I have to say, parenthetically, this is why I think so many accrediting bodies are so ridiculous. Okay? Anytime the state or an accrediting body or anything comes in and says, you need to love these children more by giving them the right height on their drinking fountains. Right? If we need to be told that, we are in the wrong business. We are in the wrong business. Okay. So those basic things. All right. Once those basic needs are met, then we can start on the aesthetics, the really fun part, which are also equally important, or almost as important. Lighting, inside and outside of the classrooms. Ambiance of the room. I'm serious. Ambiance of the room, such as music, wall decor. Okay, what do you put on the walls? If you're stuck with the primary colors, I love art. If you're stuck with the primary colors, though, really, move past that. Get past that. Blue, yellow, and red are nice. But after 6 years of being surrounded by those in their classrooms, the children are going to pretty much hate them. Okay, get past those things. Nothing wrong with some of these, you know, cute teddy bears around the poster of the calendar or whatever it is. But push for something deeper. You know, desire the greater gifts. Other attractive and useful furniture, small creatures, fish, terrarium, butterflies, all these things. What are you putting in the classroom? Just as your teachers will likely not be familiar with the seven laws when they first get hired, so you will likely have to train them as to how to express beauty in their classrooms. Yes, guys too, I'm talking to here. Because, okay, let's just jump right into it. We're trying to do truth, goodness, and beauty. We're actually pretty good with the truth and goodness part. Beauty still is kind of that hard one, right, to grasp and express. So, sample rule, recognize and plan for the difference between men and women when it comes to this area of making your campus, your classrooms beautiful. You'll see this, mostly you have women in the elementary. I hardly need to tell them what to do in their rooms. Other than, go for it. You know what our standards are, okay? It's not to plaster all sorts of ready-made, bought stuff all over your room. No, keep it nice. Paint it in a color that is warm and inviting. Frigid cold white is not. McDonald's colors are not. Okay? Seriously, that you guys know this. They've studied this. How to get people in and out of things fast. We'll put some really obnoxious colors there. They will want to go away. They don't even have to think about it. In fact, they won't. They'll just go away, which is what they want. No, we want it to be more of almost, dare I say, kind of a living room feel. Not that you're going to fall asleep on the couch, okay? But no, but it's a comfortable place to be. Okay, women tend to get that kind of naturally. Men, oh my word. I mean, they make the Spartans look overdone. That poster's been there for the last 6 years, you know? And it's about something that happened 10 years before that. Really? So the men will need a little bit more help on this one. Okay? They really will. But let them do largely what they like. Let them have some fun, some unique elements in their classroom. The kids will like that. Right? Okay. But you have to insist on it. Neatness and cleanliness, of course, are basic requirements. But allow for and encourage some creativity. Just, all right, I'll give you one of my... A secondary lady, single gal, asked if she could paint her classroom over the summer. And I thought, well, of course she gets it. Sure, go ahead. I was gone from vacation, came back, walked into the room. It was red. The room was red. The whole room. Maybe not the ceiling. I said, what are we doing here? Hell? She wanted warm. Wow. Okay. Okay. You got the idea. Spell it out. Sample violation. You really you need to guide them. Okay. You really need to guide them. Particularly this idea of beauty. What's appropriate? What's really... Guys, if you're an administrator guy, you know, and I have no idea what you're talking about. Ask some ladies... Okay, and I'm totally serious on this. Ask a mom. You probably have one who's into design. I'm not talking about whatever is feng shui still around. I did this with one of our alum moms. I wanted the auditorium redone, but cheaply. I had no idea. Okay? And she came in and said, well, try this, do this, and that. And it wasn't very expensive, and man, it looked better. So get help. All right. Principle of the principal. Principal must be a servant to all. Wow. Okay, smarter heads than mine have said it well. Authority and responsibility flow to those that serve. Our Lord said it, of course, best. He who would be first must be last of all. Let's not miss the obvious. It's obvious. It's okay to lead. That's what we're trying to do. It's not okay to insist on it, much of this Doug touched on last hour, and think that you're above what you're requiring other people to do. Heaven help you if you ever get that attitude. Chief cook and bottle washer should be about what sums up your job. Okay? Let's spell it out there a little bit. What are you willing to do? Well, pretty much you should be willing to do everything. We didn't get into this work, hopefully, because we just love big old books, which we should, or discussing ancient educational practices, which is kind of fun, maybe in their original languages. Or better yet, you know, how theology has been expressed in various cultural manifestations of education. Okay? Those are fine things, but if you're not good at pushing little people on swings, you're in the wrong business. The servant principle certainly ties in with everything we've tied together here. This is why I left it to the last. Okay? Consider it the law of review. We shouldn't despise old books. We teach Homer, for goodness sakes. We teach Latin and Greek. Okay? So, we understand the importance of the curriculum. But let's get back to what Paul said. Desire the greater gifts. Love, of course, being the most important. So love the students. Love the teachers. Love the families. Okay? Be willing, basically. Here's a sample rule. Do recess duty. Do recess duty. Help clean up after lunch on occasion. Certainly be out there at lunchtime. Read your favorite children's book to the preschoolers. Give a speech to the rhetoric class. Coach a sport. Direct a play. Unplug a toilet. Shovel snow. Teach a class. Sample violation, stay in your office. Think you don't have the time. Indulge in self-pity when you wait for every family, okay, to leave after the Christmas program. And they're still talking and eating cookies. And you're the one that has to turn out the lights and lock the doors. Too bad. That's your job. The Micah Mandate, this happens to be Theodore Roosevelt's summary of it. Okay, he called it the Micah Mandate. Micah 6:8. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. That pretty much sums up the principles. Our gifting may be the seventh in Paul's list, but it is absolutely necessary and good for the health of Christ's body. Thank you.